This is the toughest sermon that I've ever had to give. About 6 weeks ago when I told Pastor Tony that I'd like to speak on, you know, the marks of church health or Christian health, it just didn't even dawn on me until this week. Who am I to speak on this? You know, that I have plenty of flaws, and my in-laws know most of them. In fact, Aunt Kathy's here, and every year she has this, used to have this Saratoga thing, and I am the world's most absent-minded person. In fact, I was called the absent-minded professor when I was a kid. So every time we'd go there in August for Saratoga, we would come back and I would forget something. And Kathy would have to package it up, go to the post office and mail it over to us. So Saratoga doesn't happen anymore. And I think maybe it's because she was going broke with the postage. But anyway, like I said, my in-laws know my flaws. But last night, God kind of encouraged me because he said, well, think of it this way. Is that I'm not beautiful, but obviously I have a keen eye for beauty because look who I married. So I might not be the picture of spiritual health, but I know how to point towards it. And with that, we're going to have a video intro.
Here at the National Institute of Student Ministries, our researchers have discovered a radical new method of addressing a shocking trend that has shaken the very foundation of this prestigious institution. Quite frankly, we didn't think it would work.
You see, the me linebacker is in existence because there's a crucial problem.
You know what, bro? I don't really care. Today, it's all about me.
The me linebacker deals directly with the me attitude.
When it's about me, you gotta pay a fee. Booyah to the esophagus. Booyah to your medulla oblongata. Booyah to your pancreas, baby. Booyah, booyah, booyah! You see, we live in a culture that every commercial is telling you this. If you don't buy my product, you're not skinny enough. You're not tall enough. You're not buff enough. Philippians 2, it's not about you.
Hey, I'm just headed to the mall. I haven't been forever. I need to go spend some money on me. I need to go make it rain. I told them.
Ouch. In one community alone, meism has dropped 75%.
You was lost, but now you found.
Not since the stock market crash of 29 has anything dropped faster.
You see, but the linebacker is trying to kick it to you straight.
Run!
The linebacker's here to blow the me out of you so the Christ can fill you.
Hey, what are you doing? You want to come hang out after church?
No, I think I'm going to go home and jizzam.
Jizzam? You need to be focusing on the great I am.
The linebacker is here to promote thy will be done, not my will be done.
It's not about communa me, it's about community.
So, I really need help with my walk with the Lord, Anit. Anit?
Your mama's talking to you, your dad is calling you, and you can't even hear him because you're texting. You're texting, you're always on the phone. You see, what the linebacker does is when kids are in outer space, I give them a booyah of grace. But we've lost the capacity to communicate face to face. Woo! Put down your pot and give it to God.
Expect it. When you least expect it. From all of us here at NIFSM, no pain, no gain.
All right. That's good, huh? Well, in our passage today, Luke 22:24-27, we see some disciples that are really into themselves, into the meism. That's Luke 22:24-27. It'll come up here in a minute. A dispute also arose among them as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. These are the disciples. So they're starting to argue over who is the greatest. Now, before I go on, I have to tell you something that that sometimes are parallel passages in other parts of the Gospels, and so you read all of them to get the full story. And this starts halfway through the story. What I found out was that James and John went to Jesus, two of his key disciples, and they asked Jesus if they could sit at his right and left hand. And not only that, but when that didn't work, when Jesus told them, you know, really, it's not for me to decide. It's not for me to give. Only the Father in heaven can decide who sits on my right and my left. Then they went to their mom, and they had their mom come and ask Jesus. In fact, she didn't ask Jesus. She told Jesus. Now, this is like the soccer mom from hell or something, you know, that would be yelling at the refs or whatever like that. She actually didn't ask. She told Jesus that I want you to put my sons at your right and left side. And, I mean, it's pretty outrageous because as everyone, as Pastor Tony knows, two Italians are going to be on the, you know, left and right side of God. So, you know, it's pretty outrageous. And so Jesus told her no. Now, not only that, but this was the second time they had argued about who was the greatest. Back in Luke 9:46-48, a dispute broke out, and Jesus had to break that up. And then he corrected them and told them that the last shall be first. And they're a little slow, and they still didn't get it. I mean, these are the type of guys who, if they walked through their yard and they stepped on a rake and it hit them in the forehead, they would look at the rake, and instead of moving it, they would say, you know, I'm going to try harder next time to avoid that rake. And the next time they go in the yard, they step on it again, and it hits them again, because they're not getting it. So he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. In our passage today, we see four marks of a healthy church or four marks of a healthy Christian. But before I begin, I'm going to spoil your fun a little bit. Because what I'm going to do is give you four marks and four contrasts, a good and a bad. And what happens is when you hear the bad, you might start immediately thinking of someone else, you know, your spouse or a relative or something like that. And that's probably one of the signs of an unhealthy Christian is that when we hear about these things, we focus on everybody else. Oh, man, my husband needs to hear this. He needs to change this. What I want you to do is focus on yourself. What can I learn from this? What can I change? The first mark of a healthy Christian is that they value servanthood over ambition. In other words, they seek to serve instead of seeking recognition. That they point to Christ instead of pointing to themselves. That their personality or the things they do for other people is not so large that you can't see Christ in their life. That the recognition points to them instead of pointing to God's work in their life. I think a great example of this is a person in our church. And at the men's retreat last spring, I was talking to a guy, and he was going through some rough times. So I listened for a while, and I said, well, that's pretty tough. Do you have somebody supporting you? You know, somebody you need to, you know, meet with you weekly or something. He goes, oh, yeah, yeah. Ralph Basamo and I are, you know, talking. We're in conversation. I go, okay. So then the next day, I meet another guy, and he's going through a rough stretch in his life. And so I listened to him for a while, and I said, well, do you have any support? Are things okay? And he goes, oh, yeah, I've been talking to Ralph Basamo about this. So finally, the third day of the men's retreat, the same thing happened. And so I'm beginning to wonder if I'm the supporting actor in the story of Ralph Basamo. But what I realize is this guy has no title in our church. He has no role, and yet he's serving a lot of men in our church. He's supporting a lot of men in our church. And in any other church, he would probably be an elder. It's just because he's Pastor Tony's father, and that carries a lot of weight with it, that he doesn't have an official title or role in our church. But guy after guy after guy that I met at the men's retreat was telling me, yeah, Ralph is talking to me about this, or he's working with me on this. So Ralph is sort of like the spiritual snowplow in our church, and I just sort of walk behind and just have this little shovel, yeah? The second characteristic, other than servanthood over ambition, a second characteristic, kind of related, is humility over pride. And all of us like to think that we're somewhat humble. All of us probably don't realize how much attention we draw to ourselves or how much pride that we do have until certain questions are asked. that kind of cut through the haze. I remember reading a book about 4 years ago that's probably one of the top 5 to 10 Christian spiritual books that I've ever read. It's called The Emotionally Healthy Church. And then he followed up with a book, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, written by Peter Scarzero, another Italian. by the way, just an aside, I'm really glad that Colleen's family's in here because Ben's had a skewed view of how many Irish and Italian are in heaven. So now I think it kind of balances it out. But anyway, in that book, he asks a question that just stuck me. He said, a sign of emotional maturity is how offendable are you? And I went, that digs, because that is so true. And he goes on to say that instead of getting defensive when somebody critiques you or wondering what's their problem, he said the correct response is to think, you know what, if you really knew me, it's even worse than that. That's a sign of humility. Another sign of humility is how teachable are you? When people bring up issues in your life, do you get defensive or do you say, well, tell me more? When you're learning something, if you're speaking up here, do you seek out Tony for instruction on how to speak? Do you learn from other people in your family? Do you learn from your spouse? Or do you resist that? It's basically how teachable are you? And not just how teachable are you when others bring up issues, but are you a lifelong learner? Do you go out of your way to ask people for feedback about yourself? Do you go out of your way to learn from other people? Do you stop people and say, hey, I'm impressed with this quality in your life. How do you do that? I'm impressed with how you teach kids downstairs. I'm not a natural kid person. How do you do that? So are you a lifelong learner? Another aspect of humility is, do you easily apologize? How easily do you apologize when you're wrong? Or does that apology kind of stick in your throat? And it takes days for you to apologize. One of the things that Colleen has said about me is that I'm a good apologizer. But I think one thing she didn't know is that's often because I see it and I go and I apologize. But I noticed that when other people bring up issues about my life, I kind of tend to get defensive. It's harder for me to apologize. So when I see it, it's much easier. But I think a real test of humility is when other people can see issues. And do you want to learn from that? An example of this is I have people that I call my marriage mentors. They do marriage ministry. And I got so excited about that I wanted to learn from them. And so I put on a couple marriage conferences, and then people started coming to me for counseling. And I wanted to do it just so perfectly that I would call them on the phone. I asked them, can I call you on the phone after my first one and run through it with you? And so I called them up, and I said, okay, this is, you know, how it went. And I think I could have done that or that or that or that, and just went over and over and over it. And finally, one of them said in a kind of a funny way, it sounds really harsh, but in a real tender, funny way, she just said, Randy, you need to get over yourself. Said, it's not about you, it's about what God is doing in their life. It's about what the Holy Spirit is doing, and you're just a partner with that. And so I'll never forget that. And every once in a while, like in preparing for this sermon, I get stuck on worrying about how I'm going to do, and I remember that and say, Randy, get over yourself. The third mark of a healthy church or a healthy Christian is that it's marked by example versus exhortation. Exhortation is teaching, talking. And you know, there's always people that you meet that have read the Bible 50 times and they want to tell you everything that they've learned about it. But they're talking the talk more than they're walking the walk. And so that's a real challenge for us is, I think as we grow as Christians, we do less talking and we do more living it out. That as we grow, as one person said, that as you grow as a Christian, you sin less, but you confess more. Another way of saying that is you become more aware of your flaws, and that humbles you. So as I said, the listening kind of grows, and the talking becomes less. Now, if you're one of those people where you say, you know what, people say that people talk a lot, but you know, I haven't ever found anybody in the church that just talks too much. You know, I found a lot of great listeners in the church. it could be that you're the talker that everyone's listening to. So another thing that has really impressed me of a person that's a great example is how do they treat children? And let's listen for a minute on how Jesus' view of children. An argument rose among them as to which of them was the greatest. Different passage, same issue. But Jesus, knowing the reasoning of their hearts, took a child and put him by his side and said to them, "Whoever receives this child in my name receives me." Because in that culture at that time, children had absolutely no rights. They had no more rights than a slave. And people would just ignore them. They're like pests, you know, go away. And I'm very impressed by people like Pastor Tony, for example. If he's talking to people and one of his kids runs over, you just see this big smile on his face, you know. And even though he has to say maybe wait or whatever, you can tell that it's just a joy to see one of his children. Lastly, another thing that impresses me about being a good example is, do you balance the fruit of the Spirit? Are you a balanced Christian? No, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. Something like that. I may have forgotten one. But what happens is a lot of us have a personality that has a natural knack at something. Maybe a natural knack at patience, but we're not very good at joy or something else. In my home, that lying was a huge, huge sin. And so I don't lie that much. You know, gossip was really huge. I don't have much of a problem with that. But anger was okay. And so I have a problem. I have an issue with anger. I have to work on that. But what happens is a lot of times we judge other people by something that's like breathing air for us. It's easy for us. It's not that difficult. But we have to remember that we need to be balanced. And there's people in the community that balance us out. One of the things that I really enjoy about Norm and Val is I just love hanging around them is because they're so fun. And that may not seem like, hey, this great spiritual quality. I call them the ministers of fun, you know. But I tend to have the serious personality that, you know, like 60% serious, you know. But there's this 40% fun that just was dying to come out. And they pull it out of me. We had a small group together and I really enjoyed it until they kicked me out. But the fourth dimension is the healthy love versus one-dimensional love. The fourth mark of a healthy church or a healthy Christian is healthy love or multidimensional love versus one-dimensional love. This is a person that can both hold others accountable and yet accept human frailty. Ephesians 4:15 says, "Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ." Speaking the truth, but in love. Galatians 6:1 says, "Brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently." So we all know about that idea of soft love and tough love, especially when raising kids, you know, is that there is sort of the mothering, unconditional love that every kid needs, but there's also a tough love that they need where you have to set reasonable discipline and give reasonable consequences. But it's the same way as adults, is there, if all you're ever doing is accepting all your friends around you, but if their life is tanking and you don't say anything, if you see them driving off a cliff and you don't say anything, are you really a friend to them? Yet, on the flip side, if you're a person that's in everybody's business, you know, and always sees how everybody can improve, maybe you can't accept human frailty. Matthew 7:1 says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged." And one I like, Proverbs 19:11 says, "A man's wisdom gives him patience. It is his glory to overlook an offense." There are many offenses that are just minor. Somebody can just be having a bad day. They're a little grumpy. I remember my old pastor, he said that after a while, his wife, you know, grew to realize that she would just, instead of taking something so personally, she goes, "Hey, honey, is this a bad day?" And he'd say, "Yeah." And she'd go, "Okay." Now that's, you know, minor. If it's a, you know, a medium issue or it blows up into a big issue, obviously you talk it through. But you don't have to talk through every single little offense. That there's a lot of offenses that is our glory to overlook. I know... Both Colleen and I overlook a lot of each other's offenses or idiosyncrasies, her probably more than me. An illustration of this is when I used to play with Ben when he was young, we had these little Legos and little blocks, building blocks. And what he liked to do is he liked to build them up in one straight tower. And I keep trying to tell him, this is when he was three, I think, or something. And I'd say, Ben, you know, if you keep building on top, it's going to fall over. You know, I warn him. And so then I just let him go because he's going to have to learn through experience. And sure enough, bam, and fall over. He'd get frustrated and he'd come back and he'd do it again. And I'd say, now, if you put a few blocks out like this and build more of a balanced base, you know, that's going to work. And yet he'd still build it up, you know, and finally fall over. So finally he learned. He wanted to build the biggest tower in the world, you know, one that was, he got it in his head, I want to build one higher than my head. You know, a kid, that's really cool, right? So he learned to start building a really wide base, and slowly but surely he built it up. And that's what happens when we balance, have a healthy love, is that we have a balanced love and that it's more solid. So, four marks of a healthy church or a healthy Christian. One is that they value servanthood over ambition. Secondly, is that they show humility over pride. Thirdly, that they're an example. They walk the walk more than they talk the talk. And lastly, that there's a healthy multidimensional love instead of a one-dimensional love. Let us pray. Lord, it is such a challenge. None of us can claim to be spiritually healthy, to be spiritually okay. And we get humbled every day and every week at the job, or in our family, with our kids. And yet we know that you just desire us to grow. And I pray that we will take these principles of a healthy Christian and with your help to learn to internalize them in the days to come. In your son's name, amen.